Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Hey everyone, this is John Rocha, one third of the Geek Buddies, with this awesome ad for you. If you like this show and you want to make your own, and some of you have reached out and asked us about making your own podcast, well, let me tell you about Anchor. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. And now you can even add any song from Spotify directly to your episodes. The possibilities are endless for what you can create, whether it's music analysis, your own radio show, or something the world's never heard before. Go ahead and let your freak flag fly. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and so many more places. And you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Take it from us here at the Geek Buddies. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Now, on with the Geek Buddies show. Everyone, and welcome to another brand new spoiler review episode on the
Geek Buddies. Hey! Is it cheesy? Yeah. Do we love it? Yeah.
Yes, we do. And we're back to talk episode 2, Cut and Run, of Star Wars The Bad Batch here on this particular episode of the Geek Buddies. It is a spoiler review episode, as we said. So if you haven't watched the episode, please stop here. Go watch the episode on Disney Plus. Come on back and pick up where you left off. Let's introduce ourselves. I am the Outlaw John Rocha, writer, producer, host here on the Geek Buddies and the Outlaw Nation.
I am Michael Vogel. I am a writer and producer of animated TV shows and movies.
And this is Shannon McClung. I'm an animation writer and a television actor, where you may have seen me on Silicon Valley, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and Teen Wolf.
And joining us yet again, and she's going to be joining us for all 16 of episodes of these reviews here, it is the great Laura Kelly. Laura, how are you?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me again, guys. Happy to be back for all these fun reviews.
Absolutely. She's the co-host of Force Toast Pod and the co-host of The Jedi Way here. What happened?
What was that? Say that again.
Force Toast Pod.
There it is.
Sorry, Alice. I apologize to you.
Get
as well.
My show name right, or I'm out of here.
No, getting those green M&Ms, that was not easy. Anyway, we're going to get into so many things here. Today, we'll talk about this second episode in the season. Definitely much shorter than that first episode. This one clocked in around 30 minutes with credits. So we're going to talk about it all beat by beat. But first, let's give our overall impressions of the episode. Let's start with our guest, Laura Kelly. What did you think overall of this second episode following such a momentous and massive opening episode of the season?
It certainly was momentous and quite long. So this one was definitely a little bit more like in the vein of kind of what we're used to in terms of Star Wars animation. Mm. The pacing was still there for me. There was a little bit less action than the first episode for sure. But there are so many like little Star Wars great pieces of content in this episode that I really enjoyed. And I think I enjoyed it a lot more on my rewatch. So having watched it a second time, I was fully on board. And, you know, we're building a little bit more on like the Hunter Omega relationship. And I really enjoyed visiting the certain characters that returned from the Clone Wars in this episode as well. So overall, definitely not. It wasn't as strong as the first episode, but still an extremely strong, really entertaining episode for me.
Yeah, I have to agree with Laura. On a second rewatch, I found a lot more to discuss. I texted Laura yesterday. I don't know if there's much to discuss here. We should be in and out. And then I rewatched it. I was like, nope, actually, there is some philosophical discussions and more to discuss here. Michael, this is from director Brad Rouse, Stuart Lee. It's written by Gursimran Sandhu. And, of course, Jennifer Corbett back to write this as well as a showrunner. Talk to me what you thought about this second episode.
A little bit similar to you guys. You know, obviously after the huge big bang of that supersized premiere, this definitely didn't have the same huge impact. But a lot of times at the beginning of a serialized series, there's certain things that you sort of need to get out of the way. Like, what are we at? Why are we actually taking a kid around with us? What are we doing? And you have an episode that sort of answers some of those questions so that you can kind of put them to bed and dive back into the adventure. And I think this episode did a really nice job of that. I think going back to Seleucami and catching up with Cut was a great way in to that, to sort of reestablish things. And even though I thought that the heart of the episode was the Hunter and Omega stuff, for me, the most interesting thing in this episode, and I feel like one of the things that's going to be most interesting in the next several episodes, if not the whole season, is actually watching that transition from the Republic to the Empire. Because we've seen a lot of, we've seen the show, we've seen Clone Wars, we've seen the stuff where the Republic was there and Palpatine was making his moves.
Yeah.
And with Rebels, we sort of pick up and the Empire is already pretty well established into the original trilogy. Right. But Bad Batch is kind of traversing a lot of territory where we're seeing this transition, which we've never seen before. So that was some of the stuff that I found the most interesting.
Absolutely. Shannon, I think Mike hits it right on the head here. This is the Empire of the Lost Years. We're getting like all these years that we never had before, all these moments in this transition time. Maybe there's been some stuff on it. I haven't read every single book that's come out recently. Maybe there's been some allusions to it or some stuff that's been said there. But this is pretty much the transition into Empire rule for sure, along with holograms telling you what to do and what have you. And this is an interesting second episode for sure. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, this is what has been really great about all of the Star Wars televised properties, or all of the Star Wars televised projects, is they fill in those gaps in the timeline. And where you, and especially for like the prequels, for those older fans who weren't as into the prequels as the younger fans, what the Clone Wars did that was so great, which Vogel has spoken to a lot, is kind of padding those characters so that when you, after you watch the Clone Wars, you go back and watch the prequels and you get something different out of it. Now this episode, yeah. I mean, once you start off with such a bang, like the first episode, you can't have every episode be like that. I mean, this episode is more of an example of what the show will probably be week to week. Now, I think we're still going to get some huge action, but the reason that the action we get so invested into it is because we get to know the characters more. And as you start to see this developing relationship between Hunter and Omega, as you get to know Tech and Wrecker, and we already knew Echo, but I mean, you get to know those guys better, you become more and more invested in that action. So, I mean, I thought, you know, the sequence at the end was a lot of fun. And yeah, I think this is just kind of setting the stage for some bigger stuff that's coming down the line.
Absolutely. There are concepts that are being dropped just casually in conversation quickly and moving on just to let you fester with them as a viewer for sure as you watch the next scene roll through. I like that they're dropping things that are a little bit bigger than what you're actually watching on the screen. Appreciate that. And I thought this episode certainly did that again. This idea, once again, of free will versus choice pops up. This idea of family. What does it mean to be a family? All of that seems to really be highlighted here. And speaking of the Clone Wars, we certainly get somebody who returns from the Clone Wars here in this episode as well. Let's jump into it. And last warning, spoiler review. If you haven't watched it, get the hell out of here. Go watch it. Come on back.
Get out of here.
Hang out with us. So let's pick up where we left off. Of course, the Havoc Marauder full of the Bad Batch. They've taken off and escaped Kamino and Crosshair, and they're heading towards the planet of Seleucami. Am I saying that right?
Seleucami. You did it.
Yes. Ah, thank you. Nailed it. Thank you so much. We see Hunter kind of walking out of the cockpit, and he sees Omega and Wrecker both sleeping, of course, because they're probably about equal in terms of mental intelligence. So they're asleep at this point together. Omega is tired from exploring the ship. But this question comes up. Echo asks Hunter, what are we going to do with a child? It's a very interesting concept. She's come onto the scene. Hunter went back for her, made the Bad Batch go back for her. So now there's a responsibility here as a dad. You've taken on this responsibility, and this will come to be in Hunter's face throughout this episode. As the Havoc Marauder descends into Sulukumai, it scatters the Nexu that was hunting several Nuna birds. The ship doors open. Omega shields her eye from the sun, so clearly it's the first time she's seen the sun. She samples the planet's fresh air. She touches the dirt. Then they're walking later on through a forest of towering Bith. They walk through a field of plants with fruits hanging off of them. She gets fascinated, Omega does, by a carrier butterfly. Echo asks about asks Tech about what friend they're going to see here on Sulukumai. Hunter says that they are staying off the radar and this person's staying off the radar. And then Echo asks, well, should you trust a deserter? He says, why not? We're all deserters now by that definition. So, and then they come upon a possible trap. There's a tripwire. Wrecker trips the wire, which causes some repurposed B1 battle droids to pop up. Hunter calms Wrecker down. And then we meet Sue and Cut, Twi'lek Sue Laquan. I hope I'm saying that right. Is that right, Laquan? Laquan, am I saying that right? Laquan, right? And her clone husband, Cut, who is there. They are old friends who recognize the clones. They're introduced to each other. When Cut asks about Crosshair, Hunter adjusts his Facebook status to "it's complicated." And then Cut and Hunter discuss Rex, who has apparently just been there, and informed Cut and Sue about the clone troopers turning on the Jedi. Rex also warned them about the arriving Imperial presence and they explain about the inhibitor chips a little bit more that caused the clone army to kill all the Jedi. Omega explains that the Kaminoans implanted inhibitor chips in the clones to modify their behavior. Hunter recalls that Tech said that regulars were programmed to never mention their chips, and Tech comments that this is why Order 66 works so well. So an incredible beginning, certainly Omega kind of sampling everything for new, but then Michael, we get a lot more of this inhibitor chip conversation, this impending doom of the Imperial, and we come upon a clone who apparently did not fall prey to Order 66. Cut, who we saw, I think, in season two, of The Clone Wars. Talk to me about this opening.
So a couple things. I really like, first of all, before we dive into the clones for Cut and everything, I'm really liking how they're using Echo. I think we talked about it briefly last week, or if not, I just wrote about it in a comment somewhere, but I felt like the rest of the Bad Batch were really, really well defined, and yeah. Echo was sort of just hanging out there, and we know what he can do as part of the team because of what he went through, and of course we know him from knowing him as one of the clone troopers in Clone Wars, but how he fits into this team and what his vibe is with the rest of the Bad Batch is a little bit undefined. And I kind of like, whether it's in that very opening scene where he's the one who's like, what are we going to do with a kid? Or when they're walking up to the farmhouse, where he's the one who's like, who is this guy? Should we trust a deserter? You see that of all of them, Echo is still sort of holding on to that sort of regular clone mentality. Yeah. That he's the one that's still a little bit more of the, these are the rules, this is what we're supposed to do. And then we'll talk a little bit more about him and Tech and their relationship later in the back half, which I thought was really fun. But I think they're using Echo really well. Also, I've seen a lot of people point this out online, but the things on his head sure do make him look like Lobot from Empire Strikes Back. So wait, Lobot does these things. Echo does these things. Are we getting a little bit of something here? So I thought that was really interesting. Omega's adorable. Omega was giving me 1,000% Rapunzel Disney princess vibes. Like when she got off that ship and was like, what is this? And they're like, it's dirt. It was 1,000% Rapunzel coming out of the tower for the first time. And I was here for it. I thought it was great. And then I think, like I said, using Cut and Sue and their family as sort of the place to go was really great, because that episode in season two, was one of those first, not one of those first episodes, but in season one and two in Clone Wars was where you all of a sudden realized that we were going to get to really get into some bigger discussions about clones and individuality. And even in season two, meeting Cut, him and Rex having the relationship and the discussions they had, this was like a lovely continuation of that. And to sort of see the changing shape of the galaxy as the Empire was kind of making their move through this family that we already knew, I thought was really, really smart. I think that all the stuff with the inhibitor chips was great. It was a little bit of like a review for everybody, just to remind everybody what was going on. But it was also really nice to just see Omega kind of what she brings to the table. Like, she clearly knows a lot more about what's going on. Like, Tech has figured a lot of it out because he's smart. But yeah. Omega really does have a lot of information. And I have a feeling we're going to continue to see the amount of information she has. And probably some stuff that she's keeping secret.
Yes.
You know, potentially. So how much does she really know about what was going on Kamino with Order 66, with the inhibitor chips.
Yeah.
And then as far as Cut goes, I did, like, as I was watching this, I had a question, and I saw a couple different theories online, and I wanted to bring it up to everybody here, like, so why didn't his inhibitor chip work? Is it, like, did you have to hear Order 66 for it to work? Has he been out of the mix for so long? Like, I'm really curious, because that's something that they sort of glossed over a little bit, like, we know why the Bad Batch's inhibitor chips didn't work, with the exception of Crosshair, which sort of worked. But Cut, you would think that he would have just been, like, farming or chasing some Nunas or something, and all of a sudden would have been like, good soldier follows orders. So I was a little curious as to why his didn't. I was totally okay with it. I accept the fact that it didn't, but it was a question that came up for me.
Okay, Laura, talk to me about this opening, and then maybe answer Michael's question. Why do you think this happened? Why do you think it didn't happen for Cut?
Sure. And I definitely want to address that theory, because I do have a theory of my own, I think. In terms of this opening, I agree with Michael 100% that I really love the way that they're using Echo in this episode. I'm excited to get into some of the sort of banter he has with Tech a little bit later. I think for the most part in this episode, we're getting a lot of Echo sort of acting as like the audience that may or may not have actually watched the Clone Wars before.
Yes.
Or maybe they watched it and just don't remember it all that clearly, because we're having to sort of reestablish, like, okay, who is Cut? Who is Sue? What's the deal with them? And it was really fun, I think, to bring both of them back. Part of my theory for answering Michael's question is that I think we're going to see more of Cut. I have a feeling we're going to be bringing that character back at some point later in the season, and maybe we'll learn a little bit more then about what happened with his inhibitor chip, or what didn't happen. But I really enjoyed this scene. I loved a lot of the scene with Omega coming off of the ship. We get a little bit of, like, it's sort of like the other side of Anakin hating sand, where she just drops to her knees and is just picking up the dirt and letting it run through her hands. It's just really, it's this really great little, you know, juxtaposition there between what we saw. There's a beautiful piece of score that's playing over the scene where she's, you know, kind of dancing around in the dirt and saying that it's amazing. And it's just very cute and very pretty. I really enjoyed the scene of the Nexu coming back into Star Wars, or taking other parts of Attack of the Clones or bringing them into this show. And I'm totally here for it. I love the little prequel drops that we're getting in this show.
That's for sure.
But yeah, one of the things with Cut Laquan, if you do want to go back and revisit this episode in season two of the Clone Wars, it's called The Deserter. Where we learn a little bit more about him and how Rex came to know him and sort of how their relationship builds in that episode and how it evolves. So I love the idea that when we leave Rex at the end of season 7 of the Clone Wars, that is where he goes, he goes back to Cut and Sue and to the Laquan farm. I thought that was really cool. So I'd love to know a little bit more about what happened in that scene. That's why I'm kind of hoping that maybe we get a little bit more from Cut and from Sue later in the season. But yeah, I think that this was great. We've got Sue is a really, really great. She's a sharpshooter. She's got a little bit, you know, I love that she kind of recognizes that the Bad Batch. We know that they have an established relationship. They've been there before. We have Uncle Wrecker is the relationship he has with the kids who are. This is one of those things that was sort of tackled in the Clone Wars. Those children are very unusual looking. They're a little bit easier. They're a little bit easier on the eyes in this sort of design style and this animation that we're seeing. When you see them in season two of the Clone Wars, they're just a little bit weird looking. But I think basically that the thing that they don't say in this episode is that Cut Laquan is not actually their biological father. Right. He's their adoptive father. We don't know who their human father is. But he's obviously very attached to them and has become a very great father to them. And I love seeing how he brings that in to sort of instructing Hunter throughout the episode later on too.
Absolutely.
In terms of Michael's theory, I think that number one, we're going to revisit Cut later. Number two, Sulukumai is a huge planet. We don't actually know where they were when Order 66 took place. And when I say they, I mean like Stoss Ali was the Jedi Master who was killed on Sulukumai during Order 66 by her batch of clones. But that could have been happening on like the other side of the planet.
For sure.
And I have a feeling that if like if there isn't a Jedi in your immediate, like, your proximity, maybe it just wouldn't have really affected anything. Like, he would have gotten that message and been like, well, there's nobody around, so I think I'll just hang out. I think that I almost wonder that if we're going to see Cut again later in the season, and if he does happen to come across a Force user at some point, whether it's one of the Jedi that we know are alive or Ahsoka Tano or something like that, that maybe he might react in a sort of way. But that's just my theory, is that there was nobody in the proximity. So not sure.
All right, Shannon, let's go to you here, man. What did you think overall about this opening intro? And then how do you answer Michael's question that he posed as well?
Yeah, one, I think I love that they dropped the Clone Wars narration at the beginning, because one, the Clone Wars are over, but also this is now its own show. Like, they use that as sort of like some connective tissue from one into the other. I love the shot of Omega and Wrecker passed out with all of these things opened. It looked like two kids on Christmas morning, you know, after all of the, that adrenaline has worn off from opening your presents. It's like literally like everything's open and they're just, you know, passed out. I was like, oh, that's really funny. That was a nice move. It's interesting what you guys said about Echo, because I think initially in the promos, you see Omega and I just sort of assumed like this is our window into this world. And it is to a degree, but it is more Echo. I mean, it is someone who is new to the world of the Bad Batch, because for Omega, outside of Kamino, everything is new. So, I mean, one, it's a very sweet moment. You get to see sort of this, you know, the wonder of a child seeing things for the first time. I thought it was interesting with Sue's kids that the daughter, the older they get, it seems like the more blue she is becoming. So I'm wondering, like, was it a human father, or is this just the way Twi'leks grow?
It's supposed to be a human father. Yes.
Is it a human?
Right.
Okay. But yeah, I mean, to the Cut Order 66 of it all. I hope this is revisited, because otherwise I do think this was a missed opportunity in the storytelling. Like, I do actually think, like, yes, if you are not aware of a Jedi's presence, you wouldn't necessarily know what to do. I mean, you know, the assumption is that all these clone troopers are going to be headed by a Jedi. And so, I mean, I don't think if you're away from it from soon, I think an inhibitor chip works no matter you're with the clones or if you're not. I mean, I think that doesn't affect how much the chip will work. But if you're not aware of anything around you, I don't think, because even like thinking about when we watched it in Clone Wars, when Order 66 happened, they didn't become automatons. Like, they didn't become zombies. Right. Like, they literally like, hey, we got to go kill this person. And then after it was over, like, it was over. Like, they kind of went back to how they were. So I could see Cut having a blip. Hold on. I could see Cut having a blip and not really knowing what it was, and then just kind of caring about his day.
Okay.
I think that's true. I do think there is a very subtle bit of retconning going on, which I think is good, is that because we've never really addressed what happened to the clones post Order 66, what we're seeing, and we see a lot in this episode, is that not only did the clones execute Order 66, but post that, they all kind of became assholes. Like, there's definitely,
which we'll see on the
like,
show, in this
yeah,
episode.
Like, they've, yeah, they've definitely, like, Order 66 wasn't just kill the Jedi and then go back to normal. Order 66 was kill the Jedi and then basically become a much more aggressive trooper than you were before. So I think that's going to be interesting. We'll see it in a little bit.
Yeah, and I think that's I lean more towards the fact that there are no Jedi around, so there was no need to activate him in this way. It doesn't make any sense because the other clone troopers were handling it. But there must be a reason that Rex came to Cut, and then the Bad Batch subsequently, not a day later, come to Cut. So Cut must be some kind of – he must represent something that they instinctively know to go to talk to or touch base with here in this situation. And he's a pretty progressive guy. He took his wife's last name. Give him respect. Respect to the man. I got to give it up to the guy. Let's move on here. Cut and Sue's children, as Laura just mentioned, come running in. Wrecker is delighted to see them. Uncle Wrecker there. They check out Omega because there are no children here. And they walk out with her to play. They're playing catch. And true to form, Omega asks, What's the purpose of this game? So they cut to, and then they get some intel on Omega from Hunter. Hunter explains to Cut and Sue that she might be, like them, a defective clone. But then Cut ominously says the Kaminoans don't create anything without a purpose. So I'm holding on to that. I still think she's a spy. Hunter pushes back on her purpose and says she's just a kid. Then Cut makes a joke that battling droids was easy compared to raising a child. Hunter says they had no choice but to go back for her. Cut says Sulukamai is also not safe and that Rex warned them that Imperial Cold Troopers are going to show up. Hunter tells Cut that he plans to travel to a nearby spaceport to book them off-world transport and invites Cut along. Cut says the Hunter is a wanted man. That is too risky. Cut says he has to do what is best for the children, and Hunter watches with a smile as Omega plays ball with the Laquan children. So we'll stop here real quick, and then we'll move on to the next scene. What do you think this means that Cut says here, Laura, the Kaminoans do not create anything without a purpose, and this idea of Omega still discovering everything as she goes along. We're seeing this father role being played by Hunter, like, slowly but surely throughout this episode here. What did you think Cut meant first, though?
That's hard to say. And I kind of think that maybe my very interesting theory I think about Omega being being like a force sensitive being has probably been already debunked, surprisingly enough. I do think that if she was created for some sort of purpose, I think we're going to hopefully find out soon. I'm still not sure if we know exactly what that little metal headpiece is that she wears and she takes off at some point later in this episode. But it's one of those things where I think that Cut definitely has a point that they're not creating anything without any kind of, you know, intention. Yeah. There was definitely something there. I still don't think that she's a spy.
Okay.
But, and I'm really hoping that she's not a spy, but just because she's just so adorable and precocious.
True.
But I think that there's definitely something there, whether it was just like enhanced intelligence or enhanced curiosity or something. I truly am not sure at this point. Okay. I don't really have a theory, but I do think that I really am hoping that we don't draw out this sort of questioning process too much longer. It would be nice to have a little bit of a hint or an answer as to what exactly her enhancement or defect is, depending on, I guess, who you are.
Yeah. Shannon, some people pointed out that her hairstyle is very similar to Palpatine. Do we have a Palpatine clone? Oh, God. What is your thoughts on Cut said about Omega here?
I mean, I definitely don't think she's a Palpatine clone. Anyway, all right. At her hair, I thought of Cut's hair from season 2, and it was kind of just grown out a little bit.
Fair enough.
Just a different color. But yeah, I mean, there was a moment in the episode, and I'll talk about it when we get there, that I thought for sure, I'm like, oh, Laura was right. Laura was right. Here comes the Force. But agreed. Like, yeah, I mean, this is clearly going to be one of the mysteries of the season going forward is like, mm-hmm. what is Omega's deal? Because that headpiece that she has on, is that an insignia of Kamino? I know one of the Kaminoans had it, was wearing it around her neck as well. So I didn't know if that was, is that the Kamino sort of sigil or is that just something that connects her to that one particular Kaminoan? I wasn't sure.
I don't think we know yet, do we?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Michael, what do you think about this thing the Cut references? It could she be a protector of the Bad Batch, not a spy, possibly, when this all goes down, well, since she looks like an amalgamation of all four of them?
I don't think that whatever the Kaminoans created her for, mm-hmm. necessarily has to do with the Bad Batch. Like, that's a big jump. That's a big jump to say they decided to make the first ever female version of the Jango Fett clone, mm-hmm. for reasons to say, we're going to make this thing because maybe at some point the Bad Batch is going to defect and then we'll have this thing that's going to go with that. Like, there's a lot of hoops to jump through to say that's the reason. Okay. I think there's some other reason. I still think Laura's, we are trying to make a force sensitive clone. Cause you know, like in addition, when Cut says, you know, she's definitely, there's more going on here. Like she's the only female clone. Like that is a big difference regardless of what else she can do.
True.
So why did they make a female clone now after years and years and years of just like, yeah. popping out these other clones. Why now? Why this one? What was the reason? Does it have to do with the Force? Does it have to do with trying to create someone who can do all the only way it might tie to the Bad Batch is knowing that they each have these qualities, and trying to make a perfect clone that can do all of those things might be something. But yeah. I do think there's definitely a reason. There's definitely a secret to Omega. And I think a lot of it will tie into why they created a female clone. Like, I think that is yeah. definitely a big key to it, because that is the, off the bat, before we know anything else, like I said, the biggest difference. So it'll be interesting to see. And I'm kind of with Laura. I'm curious how long they will drag the mystery of it out before we get our big reveal. I kind yeah. of hope it's sooner than later, so that we can find out what it is and let it like just propel the story forward. I think, the only other oh, go ahead.
No. Sorry, Mike. Go ahead, Mike.
No, I mean, the only other thing I was going to say is watching Omega play catch with the kids gave me PTSD to every PE class I ever had in my life, because that is how I was in every PE class yes. I've ever taken. Like, what do we do with this ball? Throw it at me. Oh, cool.
I can totally see you going, what's the point of this game? This makes
sense. Happened more than once.
Same line of dialogue delivered with a different intention.
Yeah, the whole time. All right, let's move on. Later that day, Cut and Hunter go into town. They have a convo about what the clone troopers should be doing post the Clone Wars here. Cut explains that the Imperials have started confiscating all the ships like a week ago. Says they're tagging them inside of an impound lot. Cut plans to book his family's passage off-world so they can start a new life on a distant planet. Hunter adds that that the key is to not be found. Then Cut says something really interesting. He tells Hunter the way to do that is to disappear, stop being a clone, and put your life as a soldier behind. I think this is a foreshadowing, possibly, where Hunter just goes off with Omega and becomes the dad to this clone. I just have a weird feeling that that's where we're going to end up by the time this whole thing is over. Just then, they're greeted by an Alina merchant, this is an awesome sequence, who asks them what they want. Cus says he wants to book this passage. The Alina says it's gotten more difficult under the Empire, and he needs to have a chain code to travel off-world. A chain code? Legally per the new galactic policy. Then we see a holo projector of an Imperial officer announcing that all citizens can exchange their invalid currency for Imperial credits, that the war is over, that the Empire promises peace and prosperity. Where have I heard that before? And the man ushering in this hologram is Vice Admiral Rampart. I discovered a human Imperial officer. And just then we see a frustrated Snivian traveler going up against a couple of clone troopers who keep pushing him off. He's like, I've got to get on this ship. They push him off because he doesn't have the chain code, and they send him down to go get his chain code or afterwards. And then Cut says getting off this planet is going to be harder than they thought. So, Shannon, this is an interesting mix. We've got a hologram telling us everything is going to be fine. Then we've got, as Michael referenced, these clone troopers being kind of assholes, shoving this poor Snivian traveler to the ground. This guy desperately, clearly had to make some kind of date or business function or whatever, and then eventually went over to get his chain code. This is the impending dread of the Imperial, the Empire, rather, having control here, don't you think?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's what Vogel said at the beginning, of kind of figuring out, this is the transition from a republic to an empire.
Yeah.
Hunter's line that troops should be pulling their forces, not securing a post. The war is over. Mm-hmm. And the galaxy, by and large, they don't know what that means to go from republic to empire. I mean, on the surface, it's just a name change. But it's like suddenly they're literally tagging you. That they yeah. want to find out where everybody is. And I think I like that they're introducing a concept in one Star Wars property and using it in another, because I think chain codes were introduced in The Mandalorian.
It was yes.
just some yeah. sort of, you know, identifier. And now to see the larger implications of what that meant, I mean, it was really interesting. And Vice Admiral Rampart, that is my good friend Noshir Dalal.
Who, oh!
if you are a video gamer, he's been in some of the biggest games. He was in Star Wars Squadrons. He was in Red Dead Redemption 2. not English. He is American. But but there's that moment of you kind of look down and you hear a voice that's kind of similar. Then like, let me look this guy up. Like, oh, that's my friend Nosh. So I texted with him afterwards. I'm like, hey, congratulations, man. That's so awesome. He's Fort Knox when it comes to NDAs. Like he will not. He does not tip his hand whatsoever. And I was like, so are we going to see more of Vice Admiral Rampart? Stonewall. Got nothing out of him.
Probably because you were about to spill the tea if he said anything. So
well, I wouldn't have put it up if he told me that. I wouldn't have said it.
Smart move. No. All right, Michael, what do you think is happening here? Are we just kind of laying the seeds a little more about how the Empire is going to be and how these clone troopers are going to be used in forceful ways by this Empire?
Yeah, I mean, like I said at the beginning, like this is one of my favorite things about this episode is from a bigger world-building Star Wars thing is just watching this transition happen and kind of watching everyone's confusion, like watching everybody not understand. And like you really do realize the fullness of like, I'll give, you know, as much as it's been well-documented on the show that I'm not the biggest fan of the original trilogy, you've got to give Lucas credit for the bigger picture of things, which is this throw the galaxy into just utter turmoil where planets are at war with planets. There's war. You're just tired of the fighting. Yeah. Everything is going on every single day. There's clones and droids. Everything's blowing up. And then all of a sudden it just stops. And this galactic empire shows up and says, hey guys, war's over. We're giving you peace. We're giving you a new monetary system. You can't really use the monetary system unless you get this chain code. So why don't you get the chain code and why don't we register everything for your safety now that the war is over? And you can really sort of start to accept the way that people would be like, okay, like this makes sense. Like I'm feeling a little weird about what's going on, but the war is over and they're saying that this is better now. Like you can really sort of see how it wasn't just like these big mustache twirling bad guys flying in and being like, we are your new masters. You're like, okay, I can accept that a galaxy that had been ravaged by the Clone Wars for years would kind of willingly or at least unwittingly go along with this. And I think it's really neat. And then, like I said, watching the clones kind of roughhouse with everybody and kind of be just more aggressive, you do realize that Order 66 has sort of irrevocably changed the clones. It wasn't that they just did this one move and said, yep, I guess the Jedi were bad, but now we're back to being the good clone troopers that we are. There is just a higher level of aggression. They're acting more like what we assume, what we know stormtroopers to act like. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be interesting to watch this transition as they phase out the clones or whatever they do and start replacing them, as Tarkin kind of alluded to in the first episode, with cheaper labor who has much worse aim.
Yeah, Laura, this is an interesting thing Michael brings up, right? Because, I mean, this idea is we've been, and I wonder, asking overall here, because you're such a massive Star Wars fan, you've been talking about this for such a long time, the idea that we've loved the clone troopers through Clone Wars. Now the Bad Batch series is kind of making us turn on these clone troopers a little bit, seeing the worser parts of them. So those warm, fuzzy feelings we felt for the clone troopers overall starting to go away a little bit as they become a little more aggressive. And we actually saw their armor looks like it has changed more closer to what we see from the stormtroopers coming up a little bit later on in this timeline. What did you think about this whole sequence and that particular concept?
Well, I kept forgetting that they were not stormtroopers. Every time I saw them, I had to like continuously remind myself like what time period we're actually in. But, you know, kind of the way that you're talking about the Empire and how this monetary exchange and chain code business has been brought about, it does sort of make me think back to things like reading the novel Lost Stars and how there are characters in that book that are supposed to be our protagonists that are like all for the Empire. And you kind of we're laying the groundwork now and kind of understanding why that is. If you lived on a planet that was ravaged by a war during the Clone Wars, whether you were a separatist or with the Republic, you can kind of see the advantage of somebody coming in with the propaganda of the war is over. We're going to start taking control and make everything more orderly.
Yeah.
So it's sort of laying the groundwork there. I got to say, there's a little bit of rhyming here in this whole sequence with the Phantom Menace, where we're talking about exchanging credits because the Republic credits are no good here. We've got this blue Alina alien whose name I can't pronounce, but she's voiced by Nika Futterman, who everybody should know as playing Asajj Ventress if you're a Star Wars Clone Wars fan. But she's the same species as Ratz Tyrell, who is also in The Phantom Menace. He's the only character pod racer who actually dies in the pod race. But yeah, there's a little bit of rhyming there with Phantom Menace, which I appreciate fully. And the fact that we're kind of seeing all of these clones kind of become a little bit more aggressive. We know that it's coming, that eventually they're going to be commissioned. We just don't know exactly when. I almost wonder if we're going to end up kind of rolling back to, at some point, we're going to start empathizing with these clones again as they're getting decommissioned. And we're suddenly having to explore again the philosophy of, we were created for the purpose of war. Now there's no war. Now they don't need us. Now what? So I'll be curious to see if they ever take this story in that direction again, or if we're just going to kind of leave all of these Order 66 minded clones, leave that storyline for another time, perhaps.
That's a fantastic point, Laura. This idea how it could mirror real life with the soldiers that go to war for our country for numerous decades, what their lives are like, the ones who are really good at it and have a taste for it and love it, what do they do afterwards? How do they transition back into regular life? Can they do it? You know, if you want to watch a classic film, Patton, watch that. His desperate desire to hold on to war, to hold on to being a soldier because he didn't want to go back to civilian life, what that can do. So I wonder if they do explore that with the clones low key throughout this as a storyline. Could be interesting. All right, we go back to Omega and the Quan children playing. We get a situation here with a sneering Nexu when she runs after a ball past the fence. Both Hunter and Sue take care of business here. Sue's a hell of a shot. Hunter and her have a little bit of exchange where he says he forgets how good of a shot she was. Pretty interesting stuff. The last time we saw Nexu, I think, was Attack of the Clones, the CGI creature there in the gladiator battle down there in the arena. But Shia comes in and tells everyone that Omega is in danger. That's how they all kind of figure this all out overall. But back in the hut, Hunter asks if Tech could create some false chain codes for the Quans to travel off-world. Tech says they only alert them a moment ago, but he agrees. He thinks he can figure it out. I love that in like seconds, he's like, yeah, I could probably figure it out. But Hunter is determined to get Cut, Sue, and their kids on the next shuttle off-world. But Omega gets yelled at after this whole situation happens with the Nexu by Hunter. Not in a aggressive way, but certainly a I was afraid for you kind of way. And Cut has to come in and pick her up. And it's just a classic thing where he like says asks if she's okay, picks her up, carries her over, and Hunter's got to learn this lesson of how to be a better dad, a more understanding dad. And then we go to Omega sitting in this rear gunner seat. She's clearly emotional. She's tearing up a little bit. She removes the amulet from her head, holds in her hand, looks out, sheds a tear, and then Hunter and Sue have a conversation about children always finding a way to get into trouble. She adds that protecting them is what they do as parents. When Hunter asks, where's Omega? Cut says she wanted to stay on the ship. Hunter says he's been thinking about things that Omega should go with Cut and Sue and when they go off world. So he wants to offload Omega, Laura, on to this Luquan family. Oh, what's your thoughts as we go into all of this here? We're making a transition. Hey, you got to be a better father. You know what? I think being a better father is giving her off to someone else who's a family. What'd you think about all of this?
I thought immediately of little Grogu. So there's a lot of Mandalorian influence, I think, in this part of this show. Yeah. However, I am sort of glad that we do reconcile it within this like 28 minute episode rather than over the course of two seasons. So, and obviously it ends a little bit differently, but I really loved this scene where we have Cut Laquan sort of demonstrating, not really telling, but full on demonstrating to Hunter how he needs to be a better dad and how he needs to remind him that this child is not a soldier. She's just a child and she has absolutely like no experience in the real world. And how he sort of bends down. He's just like, hey, are you hurt? I'm just glad that you're okay. Like he very much has to sort of demonstrate to Hunter, I think. And I really enjoyed that scene. I love the scene of Omega sitting in the gunner seat in the ship, looking up at the sky. We've seen Ezra Bridger in this exact same position in season 4 of Rebels. And so I saw that, I was getting like Ezra Bridger vibes, which is making her even more endearing to me as a character. But yeah, the fact that Hunter then, you know, gets angry at her at first, and that's what sends her sort of running off. But, you know, she's not angry at Hunter. I think she, you know, we learn that she's an adolescent and you would sort of almost expect her to. to become angry and sort of rebel when somebody would yell at her like that. But it just kind of sort of reinforces the fact to me that she's actually half that age, you know, like she might look like an adolescent, but she's only got the sort of experience of more like a 6 or 7 year old.
Yeah.
And so it's really just kind of more just enforcing for me. Like, she is supposed to be, I think, a little bit of like our Grogu in this show, which just makes me absolutely love her and want to just collect little figurines of her to have everywhere.
Michael, thoughts on this and, you know, being a good dad versus, I mean, I'm sure your dad, you know, he's got a big booming voice, but I'm sure he knew the moments when to pick you up and when to kind of call you out on stuff. What did you think about this one?
Dad had some cut moments. He had some hunter moments. There's a lot of moments in childhood.
I'm sure there was.
I was precocious. I was precocious. Let's say that.
I imagine
that.
You would have told me to run after the ball. I imagine, yes.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't have run after the ball. I would have run away from the ball. But anyway, regardless. No, I thought I do think there is something funny when you, like, to Laura's point, when you are looking at Mandalorian and then you look at Bad Batch, you're like, there is some serious, I don't know that I know how to be a dad vibes going on into the DNA of these shows. Like, let's give someone who clearly has no business being a parent a parental role, and then let's watch them stumble around not knowing what to do until they figure it out. And it's charming. It's what made us love Mando. It's why we're instantly falling in love with Hunter. Way more than I thought we would. I thought Hunter was just going to kind of be this, like, super type A badass hunter tracker character, and instead he's just this big old softy, which is kind of adorable. And kind of watching him struggle, and I love, you know, like, they do a really lovely job of, to Laura's point, Cut and Sue don't come in and say, hey Hunter, you're being a shitty dad, let us explain to you how it's done. They show, they don't tell. Like, yeah, they just do what they do, and we as the audience are watching Hunter watch them and kind of see. And, you know, it's what's really kind of lovely about all this is when Hunter says, this is no world for Omega, you know, she shouldn't be with us, she should be with you guys. That's half true. The other half is that he is feeling completely out of his depth.
Yeah.
Like, he's trying to avoid this as well, because he's like, fuck, I went and saved this person, this clone, because she was defective like us, or I, you know, I felt this desire to have her be part of the team, but I bit off way more than I could chew, which is kind of what Echo said in the very first scene, and I kind of want to offload this because I don't know what to do about it. And so I think that's the other piece of it. And then as far as Omega sitting in the ship, A, the fact that she takes that medallion off her head and kind of looks at it is just a giant spotlight on the fact that that thing is important. It's not just decoration. Like, whatever it is, to Shannon's point, it is important. Omega knows at least somewhat what it means. And looking at that and kind of having this reflective moment means that we're definitely going to come back to this. And then to Laura's point, I did. You know, you're looking at Omega in this moment, and I thought of the amazing job that they've done in the animated universe in Mandalorian. They've given us Ahsoka Tano, who was this young character who kind of looked off into the stars and, like, was looking at these Jedi and wanted to be just like them. They've given us Ezra Bridger, who was this kid who didn't know where his parents were, didn't know that he even wanted to be a part of the rebellion. They've given us Grogu, and now they're giving us Omega. They are literally stacking the deck for the next generation of amazing Star Wars characters that we are going to care about and love as much as we've ever cared about Han, Leia, Luke, Lando, any of them. And I think it's pretty awesome.
Slow down. Maybe
we'll see. I'm just saying.
We'll see. They're also selling toys. Way to go, Disney. But Shannon, talk to me about this whole situation here. Do you like this? And, you know, is the amulet, is that her thinking about her mom? Is Nala Say, in essence, a mom figure here? Was that moment of her wanting her mom after her dad yelled at her? What do you think about this whole scene?
I mean, I think that's entirely possible, but also Nala Say helped her leave, you know, allowed the Bad Batch to leave for a reason, because she's like, yeah, you know, the kid is probably not going to be safe here. Whatever we did to her, however we designed her, it could be of value to these people who may not have the best intentions anymore. When the next dude kind of popped up as Omega was chasing the ball, that's when I was like, oh, Laura was right. Laura was right. She's about to do she's about to do the Grogu mud horn in just a second.
Yeah. Right.
But then when they get back into the house and Hunter is sort of disciplining her.
Yeah.
Probably not in the most constructive way. I don't see him trying to offload her. And maybe I just have issue with that term.
Sorry, I don't mean it in a negative way. I think he's doing it from a good place, but he's trying.
I think he's thinking, yeah, Echo was right. Like, we are on the run. We are fugitives. And maybe this is not the best place for a kid, despite the fact that she is one of us. So, but what Laura said about Cut immediately kind of getting on Omega's level, asking if she's okay. Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, this is what an experienced parent does.
Yep. And you see why Sue is quite happy to have Cut be her life partner and help her in this parenting of her two children. That's a smart move overall. Yeah, I didn't mean to imply that he was offloading. I just meant that from a good place. I think it's a better situation for her to be in, for sure. And I bet if Crosshair was there, he'd probably be like, I told you. Anyway, all right, so I'm pretty sure he probably would have said that at that moment. All right, we go back to the Havoc Marauder. Let's get through this. We're going to run through this real quickly. Michael, I'm going to go to you on this one first. Of course, Echo and Tech are discussing the irony of clones wanting names rather than numbers and that people are signing up to be given numbers. And Tech actually takes a moment to be like, this is kind of ingenious, but it did send a chill down my spine. They're creating a database to identify anyone in the galaxy. We get more about how Echo is going to, how Tech is going to figure out the chain code situation. They're going to essentially surrender the ship to be able to get in there. Hunter's not happy about this. And then because Omega's on the ship, which Tech and Echo did not know. So that adds a whole new situation to this. We cut to the spaceport. The clone troopers are investigating the ship after it's been taken. Tech and Echo wait for the troopers to leave and jump down in full armor. We get all of this happening here. And then you find out that Omega has taken the disc. She's sneaking off here. And the whole time, Hunter and Wrecker and the Laquans, the whole family there, have gone over to the spaceport to get signed in. And so it's Omega who runs up with these chain codes, with this situation. And then we hear a comm chatter. Tech and Echo hear comm chatter, see a column of clone troopers marching by. Tech says they can't get caught without the chain codes. Echo disagrees. And this is where we get going. They notice that Omega and the disc are missing, as I said, that Hunter and Little Quans are in line. And Tech tells Hunter that Omega is going to pass them the chain codes. And Hunter is freaking out, fearful for Omega's safety. Sue reminds him the kids find trouble, and Wrecker runs off to help. I think I'm just going to speed through this real quick, and then we'll talk about this entire sequence over. Oh, maybe we'll stop here, and then we'll talk about the action sequence leading off with Shannon. So, Michael, all of this, Omega get involved with this, chain codes, people signing up, the database, talk to me. This is a chilling concept.
Yeah, it is. I mean, but like you really do see, again, we talked about this last week, you know, kind of using the clones to have discussions about individuality, what it means to be a person, whatever. So kind of making that point that one of the things they did, again, from the prequel trilogy into the series, is they made the choice that all the clones started to give themselves names. It's one of the most brilliant things that they did. Yeah. So automatically in the movie, bunch of like sort of clones that all looked like Temuera Morrison and all were just doing their duty. And then we get to the series and you're like, my name is Rex, my name is Fives, my name is Echo. And giving themselves names made them people, took them down a road where they became characters to us. So to have those characters that went from being numbers to individuals, having a discussion about how the Empire is trying to take individuals and turn them into numbers is just great storytelling. Like, that's just awesome. Then in addition to that, I am loving the Tech Echo dynamic. Mm-hmm. Like, again, Echo just sort of has this by the book sort of, I'm a soldier, this is what we do. And Tech, whose brain is working 12 times faster than everybody else's, who's a little bit dismissive and doesn't necessarily tell you everything he's thinking about because his brain is working so fast, watching Echo sort of get annoyed with him as Tech's like, well, this is obviously what we're going to do. It's the best move. And he's like, how is that the best move? Like, their dynamic is really fun. And then, to your point, when Hunter is like, this is a horrible idea, Omega's on the ship, and they're like, oh yeah, fuck, we fucked up. You also sort of see, I kind of like how, as far as the Omega of it all goes, it's very clear that Echo, because he's a good soldier, doesn't quite know why they have a kid on the mission. Mm. And Tech, because he is all intellect and very little emotion, at least on the surface, doesn't really relate to Omega at all. Like, he doesn't really know what to do. Hunter, we've already talked about, big old softy, clearly is in love with her. And Wrecker, to John's point at the beginning, is basically on Omega's intellectual level and is like, this is my bestie. So I do love how with the four clones in the Bad Batch, you sort of have half the clones not really knowing what to do with Omega, and the other half being just completely like, she's one of us, she's our girl. And I think that that's a great dynamic as we continue. And then as far as the action of it all, this is all just classic Star Wars goodness. Mm-hmm. Like, this is, we are, you know, there's troopers walking around. We need to avoid them. We need to free our ship. We need to get over here to get them the chain code so that they can escape. There's a clock. The troopers are walking down the line, checking everybody's information. Oh, shit, is Omega going to get here? Like, this is just a really classic, what we've come to expect from Star Wars, and it's executed really, really well.
Yeah, the tension certainly is there for sure. Yeah, is Mike right here, Shannon? Is this four men and a baby? This feels like this is what we're dealing with here in this situation. I mean, it just feels, and I love that they have Omega do exactly what a child would do, crying 1 second, 5 minutes later, leaning over from the chair. What's up, everyone? It is a great day. You know, so like she's moved past it. So yeah, what did you think about this whole thing?
I mean, the coolest thing that I noticed was when Tech was doing the chain codes, how Omega is watching him. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, is she watching him because she's thinking, oh yeah, that's how I would do it too? Or is she watching him saying, hey, there's five there, not four?
Mm-hmm. Why? Not yet. She'll notice that a little bit later.
No, yes. I'm saying she noticed it then.
Oh, interesting.
That she's watching him do a fifth chain code saying, well, there's four of the family. Who else from our party is going with them?
Oh, interesting.
That was my take on it right away. Because at first I thought, okay, she's an amalgamation of the four clones. She has Tech skills. She's watching him. And it's like, oh no, she is maybe operating on a higher level and she realizes what they're doing, that they're trying to get rid of her.
Oh, okay. All right. Laura, what'd you think about this whole sequence here?
I want to talk a little bit more about Tech and in Echo. I really enjoyed this sort of sense of like playful familiarity that the two of them have. There's just this really kind of fun banter as we've separated the two of them from the rest of the group to sort of complete this section of the mission. It was just one of those things that was really fun for me. I think I sort of read Tech as being a little bit younger than the rest of the group, and maybe that's just in how he sounds. He just has a higher pitched voice, so whether or not they all sort of came to be a part of the Bad Batch at the same time or if it was over the course of events, I'm not sure, but he definitely just sounds a little bit younger. We also have Echo, who's new to the group, and so I kind of love that they may or may not have sort of that in common. And one of the things I remember thinking when I watched the Bad Batch arc in The Clone Wars was feeling sort of like weird a little bit for Echo. And this is me like projecting, I'm sure, but just being like, well, he's with all this new group of people. He's not with his old group of people. He's going to be like in this unfamiliar ground. Is he going to fit in with this new group who have been like this established, you know, sort of their established Bad Batch. And now they've got this new member, like, I just really like that he's fitting in with them. enjoyed watching this scene where I'm like, okay, yeah, he's not the outsider. We had a couple of sequences, I think, in the premiere episode where they're like, oh yeah, no, you're just not used to the smell of our weird bunk yet. Like things like that. But this just kind of established me like, yeah, he is fitting in. This is a good place for him. This is where he belonged. I'm glad that he went with them in that arc of the Clone Wars rather than staying with the rest of the group, which we know probably would not have turned out very well for him.
Yeah, probably not. Even one of those guys pushing people around for sure. All right, let's get to the last sequence here. We go back to the ship. Big old fight breaks out. Wrecker comes in. There's all this stuff going on with Tech, Echo, and Wrecker there for sure. And in the meantime, Omega arrives with the chain codes, notices that Tech made five chain codes instead of four. Shannon is thinking that she noticed it beforehand, so wants to kind of maybe call an owl hunter in this. Cut is surprised that Hunter did not inform Omega of the plan. Of course, a good dad would have this conversation ahead of time not just throw it in at the last minute. A minute, Hunter tells Omega that the extra chain code is for her, so she can go with Cut and Sue. Omega is shocked, asks if she did something wrong. Hunter explains his reason. Omega says she wants to stay. Then she gives Hunter a sad, unyielding stare as she leaves. We've all delivered that stare as children, I'm sure. Then we go back to the Havoc Marauder, and this is all going down while Cut and Sue's family do get on the spaceport, but there is a tense moment where one of the clone troopers recognizes Cut. I thought that was a brilliant little moment to have in there, and then gets called away because of all the stuff that's happening in the spaceport. Wrecker, they can't seem to disable the clamp. Wrecker says, F it, I'm going to disable this thing, yanks it off, and they're totally cool to go. He asks where Omega is. Then we hear Omega say, wait for her. She runs down to see them, gets grabbed by a clone trooper. Hunter frees her. Cut boards the shuttle. They see the family. Cut gets on the shuttle. They see the shuttle fly away. Then they get onto it onto their ship, the Havoc Marauder, with Omega. And they also fly away themselves. And Omega finds Hunter. While they fly away, we see Wrecker using a gonk droid to practice with his biceps while Tech and Echo fly the ship. Then Omega finds Hunter working on a computer. She apologizes that she made a mistake, but tells Hunter that she did not need to get rid of her. Omega says that she left Kamino to be with them. She says she wants to be with them. Hunter admits that he has a lot to learn. If this is where she wants to be, this is where she will stay. Hunter turns to sit on the opposite desk as she faces... Oh, sorry. Omega turns to sit on the opposite desk as she faces Hunter, whose face softens. So, and we end the episode there. Shannon, this seems to be now Omega is fully on the team. There's no more like questioning the situation. It seems like this is dad and daughter and the rest of the uncles hanging out as well. What did you think about the action sequences of the way it was done here, and also this conversation between Hunter and Omega?
Well, I think to kick it off, when Omega runs into that Imperial R2 unit, and that screech it made. I'm like, my God, I don't think we've ever heard an R2 alarm system go off like this. Like, that's going to get people's attention. The whole action scene was great. I mean, the fun thing that Star Wars is always able to do is you have different kind of points in the action, that you have the fire going on while we're also trying to do this other thing. And Echo or Tech has done his best to was it Echo or Tech who's trying to get the boot off the
Echo.
Echo.
Is it Echo? Yeah. Trying to get the boot off the ship. And then, as you said, John, like if you can't get it with finesse, Wrecker comes in there and just rips it off.
Why isn't Wrecker doing all that the whole time? Why are they wasting trying to science the shit out of it? Just send Wrecker over there. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
You can't break everything.
Fair enough.
But then the moment that you see Omega is running towards the ship in danger, Hunter launches into full-on dad mode with his Rambo Bowie knife, bang, bang, bang. And then the way that Omega phrases this, like, you know, I'm sorry, I know I have a lot to learn. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because that's teammate talk right there. That's not father-daughter. Like, I know I have a lot to learn. Like, I need you to show me how to do this stuff. Like, don't get rid of me. Like, I want to be here with you guys. It's just really kind of, you know, heartbreaking dialogue to hear a child say that, you know, to a grown up, and thinking, yeah, like we're all a team. Like, yes, we're all the same. I'm with you guys. Like, it was a very, very enjoyable, especially on a rewatch. Like, yeah. you catch more of those little emotional moments the second time.
Laura, swing to you. Yeah, and Shannon bringing up excellent points. But Laura, like, this is something Shannon just brings up at the end here. This idea of the teammate dynamic versus the father-daughter dynamic. She may know what the right thing to do is most of the time, but she hasn't had the experience. And that's where Hunter kind of, and the rest of the Bad Batch, she's got to catch up to their experience a little bit, but she's learning quickly. What do you think about this whole action sequence and this interaction between Hunter and Omega?
Well, I think that the interaction between Hunter and Omega is really going to be like the emotional centerpiece, I think, of this show. We're going to just continue to see that over and over again, which I have no problem with. I think one of the advantages that we have in this show over The Mandalorian was that Grogu did not have any ability to verbally express himself. We got a lot of big sad eyes which were very enjoyable and very cute, don't get me wrong. But this is the advantage of Omega being an adolescent human, is that she can actually express herself. And it's so cute. She, you know, like, she looks at Hunter and she's like, did I do something wrong? Is this why you want to get rid of me? Because she just doesn't understand. And I think that it's really telling that we were able to get through this whole sequence of this, you know, we need to get rid of her. It's for our own good. It's also for my own good because I can't handle this. And then, but it's her choice to eventually run back and stay. And it was one of those things, you know, we got through basically two seasons of The Mandalorian in 28 minutes, in terms of like the dilemma of giving up the child for its own good. And the fact that she comes back and she pulls away from the Laquan family, I think it just sort of shows that importance of choice. And it's one of those things that I think Harry Potter particularly drove home, that it's our choices that show us who we truly are more than our abilities. We've got, you know, this very endearing character that I think is also going to sort of serve as our protagonist eventually in this show that we're cheering for, that makes this choice, and that it's her choice to stay. And I think Hunter would have been sort of fine either way, whichever way she would have gone. She could have had a perfectly good life with Cut and Juan. But the fact that she chose to stay with these people, I think is very telling of hopefully of who she is as a person, and hopefully not because she's a spy.
Michael, Laura brings it up. I'm a bit of a cynic here, Mike. Is she choosing, or is this her programming that says I've got to be staying with these guys? Okay.
That's a good, I think you can be, even if you are cynically correct, I would still side with Laura in that if her programming is leading her down a road, Laura is right that at some point the storytelling direction is I'm going to make a choice against my programming. Even if her programming is sending her down a road where the Kaminoans want her to be with the Bad Batch for what, like, even if that is where we're going, Laura's right that the concept of choice and the concept of I do what I was programmed to do, or do I do what my heart tells me to do, it will be where we're going if we're not already there, I think.
Yeah. And she says that to Crosshair. She says that to Crosshair.
Absolutely, which is how you know. It's not your fault, which leads me. So 2 points, one on that. But before that, to Laura's point about Echo, I agree, but I slightly disagree. I think the moment where he can't unlock the thing and then Wrecker comes in and just pulls it off. And Johnny, to your point, like, why didn't Wrecker do that the whole time? I'm curious. And I would love if they went down this road. If in the next few episodes that comes up, that Echo is still sort of struggling with, where do I fit on this team? You know, you guys all have this way of working with each other, and I'm still figuring it out. Yeah. And I would love to see an Echo-centric episode where he's dealing with these abilities are new to me. Being a member of this team is new to me. I'm more used to the way things were back in the day with Rex and the guys, and really dig into that a little bit more and see an episode that's really built all around the moment where he really, really becomes a part of the team, I think would be fun. A couple things on Omega and that scene at the end with Hunter. One of the things that struck me was, Omega knows a lot about, she knows about the inhibitor chips. To Johnny's point, she said to Crosshair in the first episode, I know what you're going to do. It's not your fault. Like, she understands the clones. And she wants to be with the Bad Batch because she is a clone. And it struck me that if she wasn't female, if she was a little boy who was clearly just a mini clone, a mini Rex, a mini Hunter, whatever, I think everyone would have a much easier time understanding, you are us, we are you, we are all the same, of course you want to be with us. But by making her a female, it automatically sort of distances her to a degree where everybody's treating her more like a kid or more like a, and I think she actually understands better than the Bad Batch does that she's them. When she says, to Shannon's point, the way she phrases it, I know I have a lot to learn. Like, she wants to be what they are. Like, she wants, you know, even in that lovely moment, the Steven Spielberg Jaws moment in the first episode when they're in the prison cell and she's copying every move that Hunter does. Like, she wants to be them because I think she understands that she was created from the same stuff in a way that it's even hard for us as the audience, because we automatically like, oh, you're cute, you're Omega, we want to take care of you. But she's a mini clone. She's as much them as Boba Fett or anyone else is. And so it'll be interesting to see the more that she reveals and the more that they really get into, she's built from the same stuff they are. It'll be interesting to see how that dynamic grows.
Agreed, 1,000%. All right, well, there's our spoiler review of episode 2, Cut and Run here of Star Wars The Bad Batch. We thank you so much for watching or listening to this. Remember, you can always download it on our podcast feed, the Geek Buddies podcast feed, wherever you find podcasts. Shannon, what do we have to tell them?
Yeah, I'd like to follow us on social media. On Twitter, it's @geek_buddies. On Instagram, @the_geek_buddies. If you'd like to follow me on social media, on Twitter, it's @Shannon_McClung. On Instagram, @ShannonTheGeekBuddy. If you would like to follow Mr. Vogel, it is @MKToon. If you would like to follow Mr. Aroka, it is @TheRokaSis.
Mikey?
Look, we don't need chain codes. We're not going to register you. Everyone is welcome here at the Geek Buddies. We are a free place, free from empire rule. So if you would like to hang out with us, all you need to do...
As long as you keep it civil,
keep it civil. But other than that, but here's some things you can do to help us keep doing what we're doing. Definitely smash that like button below. Subscribe to Johnny's Outlaw page. There's lots of amazing content, including other spoiler reviews from all the other geeky things that are out there from the Geek Buddies. Yeah. If you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Anchor or Spotify or anywhere where podcasts are available, definitely leave us some stars. Leave us some comments. It helps us go up in the rankings. And the best thing that you guys can do is retweet this video, post it on your Facebook pages, put it on your Instagram stories, text it to your friends, text it to your parents. Say, hey, you should listen to these guys. They love Star Wars. And then get your parents super into Star Wars as well. That's what I do. Definitely leave some comments below. Let us know what you thought about this week's episode. And definitely stay tuned, because we have a bunch more episodes of Bad Batch spoiler reviews coming up.
Absolutely, absolutely. And of course, thanks again to the great Laura Kelly for sitting in and going with us on this ride. Thank you, Laura. Where can they find you? And please plug anything you got.
Sure. Speaking of the Outlaw Nation, come find me and John over on The Jedi Way. That's a show hosted on here on his channel, where we just talk about Star Wars in general. It's every other week and it's a lot of fun. And you can follow me on Twitter @ShutUp_Laura. It's right down there. That's my Instagram handle as well. The show that I host with my friend Alice, that's an audio podcast, is Force Toast, a Star Wars happy hour. Follow that show @ForceToastPod. And stay tuned. I'll be coming back to the Movie Trivia Schmodown in the Star Wars division at some point soon. Ooh. Look forward to that.
Yeah, she is ready. She wants that belt on her shoulder, ladies and gentlemen. You think Omega's determined to stay with the Bad Batch? She is determined to get that belt on her shoulder. All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for joining us. We love you madly, and we'll talk to you next time. Oh, can I give one quick plug? Please, I've got a new show that just dropped this past Friday. Me and Wendy Lee starting a new show here on Fridays. It's called John and Wendy Explain the World. We talked about the big news stories. We did some reviews of TV shows and films that are coming out. We also talked some K-pop news, some TikTok news, some social media news. It's a show completely different than anything else we do here on the Outlaw Nation channel. So please give it a watch. I'd appreciate some love for that show as well. All right, that's it. We're out of here. Take care of yourselves. We'll talk to you next time on another brand new episode of The
Geek
Buddies!
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.